Here we go. Folks, this is your host, Cameron Ivey of Privacy Please, and thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. Tell your friends about it if you like it. If you don't, let's just pretend you didn't listen to it. Thanks again for coming in, and we hope you enjoy the show.
And we're live. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Privacy Please. I am your co-host, Cameron Ivey, and with me is my other co-host, Mr. Gabriel Gums. Gabe, thanks for showing up, man. How you doing?
Well, sir, I'm well. Happy, say it with me, Friday.
Happy Friday, yeah. Yes. It is always the best day of the week, but then it's also very sad because Sunday comes right around the corner, and
easy.
Then next
Take
week starts
easy
again.
Wow.
sorry. I'm just being real.
I get a little sand between my toes before you throw me back into the salt mines already.
I apologize. Well, we do have a special guest today. His name is Steve Genty, Director of Threat Intelligence at Risk IQ. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to banter today.
All right. We will banter, indeed.
Oh, welcome to the show. Look, why don't we start the show like we start all of our shows? Tell us about yourself.
I've meandered my way through security and where I live. So born and raised outside of Austin in Norwood, Massachusetts, and have slowly moved south. I now reside in Memphis, Tennessee. Had a pit stop in the D.C. area where I met my lovely wife. And she is from Arkansas, a couple miles over the Mississippi from Memphis. And we've moved here about 8 years ago, and are enjoying the city. So, similar to my career, I like to meander.
Nice. You and I are going to get along all kinds of famously, which actually brings me to my first segue. Forget topic, right? Like I'm the segue master on the show. Born and raised in the Boston area. Now I wasn't, but I spent a number of my formative years in that area. You look like a man who may be roughly of the same vintage as I, if you would. And I'm surprised that through all of your travels in security and being in the Northeast, we've not encountered each other. This, by the way, is a regular occurrence. As small as the world is, sometimes it's pretty large. I haven't been in that area for some time, but yeah, no, I'm surprised we hadn't run each other. And being in security for a while, so you've been with Risk IQ for a while, Director of Threat Intelligence. How'd you get into InfoSec? Because it looks like you've been in, best I can tell, you've been in cybersecurity and InfoSec the better part of your career. Yes,
that's right. Mildly seasoned, I guess, these days.
Indeed,
which is always questionable.
It's the right
how
vintage.
That happens.
Yes,
that's okay,
vintage.
Exactly.
Mildly seasoned is the vintage.
So it was, an interesting journey. I got a degree in finance from Providence College and realized I did not want to go into finance. So I moved to DC to get a master's degree in public policy, and while there needed to pay the bills, and got hired by a defense contractor to do some work, as basically an admin on a couple of contracts. And those contracts were doing some IT security stuff. They were doing more kind of compliance and auditing, things. And I thought, oh, wow. Let me get out of here as fast as possible. But while I was there, I met some other people that were doing more of the analytics, threat intelligence, security operations work, and slowly kind of grew and learned from them to get into the threat intel space. So it was a fortuitous opportunity of needing a job and getting pulled into cybersecurity, and I'm super happy I took that first job.
Nice. It is very rare that I meet folks of our vintage that have not taken a circuitous pass. It's circuitous, that is. I know of very few people, from kind of the era you started, that actually have like degrees in relevant things. They're all over the place. Majors, policy. I love it. Is there anything in particular about your policy studies that you apply in your InfoSec travels?
So I think both on the policy side and the finance side, actually, they've both come into play. The reason I kind of went towards finance is I really like the investigative aspect of digging into numbers and understanding kind of the makeup of an organization and how it was profitable and why it was profitable. And while that's not, 100% match to what we do on the threat intel side, there is that kind of digging through data and information to understand how an attack took place. What is the network infrastructure? What does the malware look like? And so I feel like that kind of curiosity and that interest in the investigative work really kind of parlayed into what I'm doing now. And on the policy side, it was interesting to be in the DC area and get kind of immersed in some of the policy debates. And I think that's, you're seeing that come into play right now I would say cybersecurity maturing into a lot larger national level discussions and policy discussions on the implications of attacks and how we address this at a much broader policy level. And so it's been nice to see that kind of world kind of come back into the fold and be like, oh, I understand some of this and maybe how we can help kind of influence policy.
Nice. What are some of the things that have changed over the last couple of years for RiskIQ, and maybe has that changed the direction of where you guys want to go for the future of RiskIQ, or what are your what's your take on that?
So a lot has changed. When the company started, our founder Luminousos was intent on kind of understanding a snapshot of what was taking place on the internet. How can I answer questions about attacks maybe as they're happening or post happening, so that we can learn from that information and inform our defenses going forward. And at that time, it was 2010. A lot of things were around kind of malvertising and cookie stuffing and bad advertisement injections into web pages. And we've grown kind of that our collection capability and our ability to scan the internet to solve a much broader problem now, which is attack service management and threats targeting organizations. So what is your key exposure on the internet? Who are the people that are kind of targeting you on the internet? And how do you use your limited resources to best defend that? It's been an interesting evolution, which was capped off. I think we're still going, but capped off late last year with Microsoft having acquired RiskIQ. And so now we're moving our technology into their ecosystem. And I'm excited because, now we have a much broader capability to bring to bear, but we also have the ability to start to influence controls and capabilities inside of that broad ecosystem. So not only are we informing our customers of issues in their attack service and those threats to them, we now have the capability to help put controls in place that can defend against those attacks, and better inform them. And so it's a broad 360 degree kind of view of your attack service.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gabe. I know you got something to say. I was just going to say, I keep hearing that, obviously it's always been about the defense, but it seems like it's kind of transitioning to offense to have the better defense. So that's what it sounds like you were kind of getting into right there. So
we're trying to understand, the points that actors would use to target and gain a foothold in an organization. And so, we always say that visibility is key in this scenario. There's a lot of things to protect against. There's a lot of threats to protect against. If you can kind of understand your ecosystem from an internet facing scenario, and you can understand the threat actors that are targeting you, maybe we can do a little bit better.
Are there any patterns or anti-patterns that you've observed? Certainly in the last 2 years, there's a lot of relevance. And needless to say, in the last, 4 months, I'm sure that question's been asked of you a million times. So I'll ask it a million and one that you think are worth highlighting, though.
I think the pace of vulnerabilities being disclosed and the the actors that are targeting organizations, right? So on the vulnerability side, it seems like, you know, you can't go a month without a new critical vulnerability in some system that organizations have to drop everything to prioritize and patch, right? So there is a time compression that I think all organizations are now dealing with and responding to threats. But also there's the ecosystem has changed a lot. What 4 years ago would we be discussing in detail ransomware as a truly, truly big thing that major corporations have to defend against? We would probably put it in a lower tier they're just, sending emails out to a bunch of different organizations and individuals and hoping to ransom a single machine. Now we have ransomware actors that are specifically targeting organizations. They're using, weak RDP. They're using vulnerabilities in networking devices. They're gaining access. They're ransoming the king, the crown jewels of an organization. Oh, and they're extorting you in the process. And so I think the threat actor ecosystem has also changed for organizations to defend against.
Makes sense.
So, this is a common question that I like to ask, but security and privacy, when you hear those two terms, obviously privacy is kind of, it's here, but it's kind of still new, but what do they mean to you personally? And how do you feel about how it's becoming bigger and bigger with kind of just basically joint with security? Probably you can't, what's the saying, Gabe? You can have security without privacy, but you can't have privacy without security. So just curious on your take and what you guys feel about that and what you feel about that.
Yeah. I think both are really important. And so from an individual level, privacy is extremely important to all of us, especially as we see, our lives going online so much more, and so much more information available about us, in the marketplace, let's say. And so I think everybody is a lot more in tune to the privacy implications of the data they are maybe wittingly or unwittingly dispersing on the internet as they conduct daily business. And I think this goes for people and organizations as well, right? There's a lot of information that gets leaked into the ether, not because of anything malicious, but because of, security controls that aren't in place, or education of employees about sharing documents or links or loading things into the cloud, right? And so I think they go hand in hand for organizations now because privacy is important for an organization to ensure they don't have they don't have degraded security. We're moving very fast as organizations in a remote environment now and in a cloud environment, and so privacy is sometimes in the hands of other vendors at this point as well. And so I think, if you're thinking about security from my mindset, privacy has to be a big concern, because not only is it the privacy that we're expecting as individuals, it's what's the privacy implications of data leaking via third parties, via ransomware, via all of these kind of things. And so, I think they're both key elements.
Excuse me. You are now part of the largest security organization on the planet. Microsoft wasn't always that, but it is now. RSA used to hold that title. I don't know officially when it changed hands, but I'm using the measure of revenue more than anything else. But I think if we looked at actual security products, I think Microsoft actually wins that one hands down too. Certainly if you look at security landscape, considering their posture in Azure and even some of the security controls that they've been building there over the years, AIP, MIP, the whole suite. Anyway, you are now part of the largest security organization on the planet. How does that change your mission at all?
That's a good question, and something we've been grappling with over the last 6 months as we kind of merge into the ecosystem.
You were about to say mothership, and then you said ecosystem.
come to exactly.
We are bored.
There's always that fear of assimilation, right? And so I think for us, the interesting part has been how we move forward with our products into the ecosystem, and how we both contribute to it where we can effectively, you know, we can make more effective impact at a broader scale than what we previously were able to do as a standalone company, and how we can use that broader ecosystem to empower our current customer base, where we had security gaps. So, you know, from my standpoint, the excitement is, we do get to change strategy, right? And that strategy can have a broader impact on a lot wider swath of individual organizations and individuals than what we were previously focused on. You look at RiskIQ's customer base, we are primarily Fortune 500, you know, Global 2000 organizations that we're helping solve this problem for. You know, in the coming years, how do we take our knowledge of helping solve that problem for that ecosystem and bring it to scale to small and medium-sized businesses who don't have the capability to hire a team to do this, you know, to manage their attack service? How do we take our knowledge and expertise and impart it into the mothership, whereby we're making the ecosystem more more secure? And so I think, you know, I mean, that may be altruistic at the moment, but, you know, but that is what's excited me as we've made this journey is, you know, we have broader reach. And so how do we make the most out of that broader reach to impact a broader part of the security ecosystem?
Yeah, right. Thanks. On. I look forward to watching that just as keenly as I have watched RiskIQ's current movements.
I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes to.
I'll keep you on your toes. And I think in this realm of security and privacy, you got to keep ever changing and evolving and trying to get ahead of where things are going. What has been the biggest challenge that RiskIQ solves for its customers? What seems to be the most common? And has that changed over the last year?
You know, so it's twofold on top of the same data set. It's one, that visibility into your ever evolving ecosystem. What's the latest device that's vulnerable and who are the actors that are targeting it? And while it seems very basic for an organization, you know, medium, large organizations through M&A, through supplier activity, you know, there are a lot of ways that a vulnerability or a security risk could impact that business. And so, you know, being able to rapidly respond to a new threat or vulnerability for a customer has been a thing we've really been focused on. Is, you know, I like to say we try to make the haystack smaller. I may not be able to tell you where the vulnerability is in your environment, but I can tell you what systems are exposed to the internet for that specific device, and that's where you should start your investigation. I can tell you where, you know, three other devices are inside of your attack surface, maybe through an acquisition or through someone on a marketing team or third party spinning a device up that you didn't know about, and help you identify that shadow IT. So really kind of allowing an organization to evolve as its security environment evolves. I mean, you look at COVID and people transitioning to remote work. I mean, the amount of VPN infrastructure that was stood up for organizations to support that transition was massive. And we were able to see that spike, you know, in our scanning on the internet. A lot of that equipment was stood up hastily, you know, to empower organizations. There have been a lot of vulnerabilities in devices like that in the past, you know, 24 months. And so being able to help organizations answer that question has been key for us. And on the flip side, yeah, being able to understand actors and where they are on the internet, you know, where are new Cobalt Strike servers spinning up? Where's the latest infrastructure an actor is using for command and control? You know, trying to fingerprint those things at scale. We're all humans, and the actors standing up this infrastructure are human as well. And so there's always patterns we can attempt to use to find new things. So really kind of trying to stay in, I don't want to say in front, because I don't feel like we're ever in front at times, but to stay up and to provide more visibility to organizations on the bad actors that are targeting them.
The cloud isn't new. It's far from new. So I'll just get right to my point. Well, I'll just get right.
You're already on my brainwave here.
Yeah, well, you know, because when you talked about spinning up infrastructure and you talked about shadow IT, like, I feel like shadow IT, well, A, I know it's always existed. I know that for a number of reasons. A, guilty of it in corporate environments. That, Yep, I'll admit it. B, it used to be part of my job to track it down and fight it, but that was more traditional infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But how has infrastructure as code and the cloud changed the ability, or I should say just the very nature of shadow IT? Like, what do you see as kind of common moles popping up out of the ground? Because I can spin up infrastructure like this anywhere.
One of the biggest things we're seeing isn't always vulnerabilities, right? It's just, poor configuration or deployment or, something that was spun up in a cloud environment or aka other people's servers, and wasn't fully tested or appreciated of the default configuration that may have been deployed with that, right? Maybe a year and a half ago, we were seeing a significant amount of S3 buckets that were just open, read, write, global, and through no real, no malicious intent of whoever was standing that up. They just didn't know where the default configurations were. Right. And I think you're seeing a lot where we're kind of, repeating some of our mistakes of the past in the future here because, we're moving to a new environment. I think the other thing we're seeing on the cloud side is, if you look at kind of phishing activity and credential harvesting, you're seeing actors get smart and leverage, infrastructure that is legitimate from all of the major providers to conduct their attack campaigns, because it's harder to identify. And to your point, you can spin it up very quick. You can spin it down. You can spin up something new. And so that's something that we as an industry and as organizations who provide those services have to grapple with and figure out ways to combat that activity. You're right. There is, a lot of this isn't new, right? Even when I talk about what we do as RiskIQ and visibility, everybody could say, tell me how this isn't any different than vulnerability management, right? And large mm-hmm. programs that organizations have always had. And I like to think of it more as an evolution than anything, right? We're not here providing a brand new, net new service. We're here trying to improve on things and take lessons from the past and apply them to the future.
I got a two-part question, I think. So we're talking about the cloud. I want to make sure I phrase this right. So there's obviously, I think there's been an increasing amount of exposure with cloud-hosted services because. I guess my question is: have you seen an increase with that? When it comes to cloud hosted services, and is that where some of the threats are coming in from, or do you guys deal with more on-premise? Where are you seeing most of that kind of threat coming from? Is it internal? Is it kind of a mixture of all, or what do you?
I think at this point it is a mixture, right? You have organizations that rapidly accelerated their kind of move to the cloud over the last 2 years, but can't really leave that legacy infrastructure behind. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I got
10 years worth of data, 17 years worth of data that's on this file server or this database. Yeah.
So it may actually be leading to this kind of, what seems like this consistent increasing in pace of things to react to and respond to, because not only do we still have our legacy infrastructure that we're beholden to support and patch and understand, but we also have a new set of exposures and a broader attack surface. And the fact that we have moved a lot of things to the cloud to enhance our business operations, our customer experience, our employees' ability to do their jobs. I think the transition has been great in many ways, but it has expanded that attack surface. And, we try to help organizations where we can in identifying those cloud assets as they're being spun up, as they're being torn down, and to the deficiencies or the security issues that may relate to it, while also helping them keep kind of eyes on the legacy infrastructure. That organizations are going to support probably for many years going forward and are going to have that understanding of where that is in the ecosystem.
I just want to say that my thought when we were talking about the cloud is if we go back when this first came out, I'm going to save it to the cloud. I remember thinking, where is this cloud? Is this going into the sky? I was a lot younger at the time, so I don't remember exactly when that.
Above me.
Yeah, I remember when a lot of people. I worked at Best Buy. I remember a lot of people were like, "Where is this thing going? Where's this cloud?
Take me to this cloud you speak of.
I tell you about cloud workloads.
What? Do tell.
Tell me, what's a workload?
So I got a fun question for you. So let's say RiskIQ comes to you and they're like, hey, we want you to create a privacy program for us. Let's just pretend it doesn't even exist right now. But we only have $100 to throw in for the budget. Where would your mind go on where to start with that small of a budget? It could be security too. It could be security or privacy.
Yeah, I think in the vein of both. I mean, the easy answer and probably the uninteresting one is, you know, from security is two-factor authentication, right? I don't care. Yeah, most organizations now support that as a out of the box feature. It's just something that organizations or individuals are required to enable. I think we're seeing kind of a move to I don't want to say opt out, but putting it more in front of people of you should enable this than it used to be. But if you look at a lot of the attacks and the credential harvesting attacks that we see, and even eventually the attacks into organizations. Credential harvesting is a great avenue into an organization. And so if you can put another speed bump in place of gaining access to those credentials or securing what is a weaker credential with another form of authentication, I think for many organizations, that's a big bang for the buck. And if they're, if they're using larger providers, should be well within that $100 budget. I think from a privacy implication standpoint, from individuals and even companies, understanding what third party code is tracking you online, just understanding how data leaks on a daily basis, and being able to just have the understanding of it is a good start, right? I've seen it with a lot of social media and just with people in general as we've moved online. We have, we maybe haven't really thought through the implications of how much data is exposed. And a lot of times we're willing to do it because it makes our lives easier. But there are unintended consequences to that.
Right. It's funny. I'm sure as everybody probably in the whole world in our realm knows about, what was it last week tonight with, John Oliver, where he talked about, the privacy settings from iPhone, where, in particular as an example, where you can now choose to say, do not track me, that kind of thing. It's funny that we don't think about this, but after that happened, him saying, it should never be. It's funny. Like, my thought behind it was that companies are so smart to where they make you feel like you're in control, but in reality, you're not, because you should not have to choose that. It should automatically just be that option already. And if you want something to track you, you have to be the one that decides that. You shouldn't have to choose in the beginning, do you want to track this or not? Because it's very tricky. Someone can accidentally hit the other one anyways. But I just find that funny, because, it's true that it should not be an option. It should already be a default to have our privacy. It should, what are your thoughts on that?
And I think that highlights the unintended consequences, right? The ripple effect of it, because, in talking about those data brokers, it was talking about kind of like the third party impact that maybe you didn't appreciate for that app that, asked to have access to your settings and how it kind of trickled into the economy and ecosystem. I certainly think that those types of things should be on by default. And I'll be honest, this does, clash with my analyst background, right? Data points are very useful as a part of an organization, and you don't always know what data points you're going to need when doing that investigation. But I'd rather err towards the privacy side than the capture side.
So you love reporting, don't you, being an analyst? Reporting. Are you sure you didn't want to be an accountant? You would.
Out of all of my finance classes, accounting was the
that's got to be the worst, right?
So,
yeah, that's not only a very, very difficult
balance. I was like, yeah, debits, credits. It took my brain a lot of hours to get there, but I got it.
It seems like it would be a very, very difficult job because of, I don't know, like, I'm not a very big numbers guy, so I know it's not like an exciting job, but it could be for someone that loves numbers and all that stuff, but that's not me.
I just think about it. Was not me either. But I'm glad I have that. I'm glad I had that experience.
did you ever see Parks and Rec, the show?
Yes.
I always think about Ben because he, remember when he gets offered the job to be the accountant for accountants, it's like the most boring job ever. So he quits on them like three separate times. And it just cracks me up because I don't know. It's just funny. Yeah. I couldn't imagine being an accountant for an accountant's firm, accounting firm.
Very dry, I would imagine. Very dry.
Yeah.
You know, I might ask what might be a very uncomfortable question. So you can feel free not to answer this. But it occurs to me as we're having this conversation, and this show is about the intersection of privacy and security. A lot of the data that your organization harnesses certainly could be used to expose a lot of private information about an organization, maybe not people specifically, but, you know, if I were to mine that data for information, I could probably see all kinds of things like tip-offs towards M&A activity, you name it. I could, in the right hands, start to, like, that's the general challenge with data and the fact that we have as much analytical resource as we do today. You can mine it for just about anything you want. I could probably combine it with other data sets and start re-identifying all kinds of other entities also. I mean, is there any considerations to that at all? Or just kind of your basic, you know, we take all of our security controls in place because that data is sensitive otherwise. But, you know, what about the privacy implications of what you look at?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, all of our data is publicly available, but, you know, it is something that we collect and put together in a way that organizations can make use of it and that we can make use of it. I would default back to the, you know, there's so much at times data available that, you know, that we struggle to apply the appropriate lens to help our customers with the use cases as we do. There's always the scenario of, you know, a malicious actor with malicious intent can use data to, you know, for malicious purposes.
For sure.
And it's kind of why we go about doing the collection and analysis we do, because this is the same approach that a bad actor would take to understanding an organization's ecosystem, scanning that that infrastructure for vulnerabilities, and trying to find ways in. So we are trying to kind of take the lens of what an attacker sees and present it back to our customers. On the data mining side, you know, we put controls in place to ensure that our employees are looking at the data that they need for their customers, and you know, and don't have, you know, don't make you know, bad decisions. Let's go with. But you know, there is always that that issue that comes up when you are collecting data.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
So, the direction that data security and privacy is going over these last few years. Do you like the direction that it's going, number one? And if not, where do you hope to see it go in the next few years?
Parts of it, yes, right? I mean, there's an excitement in being able to make these correlation points and hopefully solve certain problems for customers that you know, are hard, right? This is not an easy you know, field. I don't think we're going to fully solve the problem. But my excitement is in how we take what we've learned over the last decade and apply that to a broader audience. You know, so we'll always be moving the goalpost and the privacy and security goalpost, because when we solve, you know, when we've taken enough time to solve this problem, a new one will occur. And, you know, I don't think in the near term this is going to get, you know, too much better because we keep connecting more things to the internet, right?
Steve, that problem is happening right now as we speak, and we don't even know it.
More things on the internet are going to create new attack surfaces, mm-hmm. new issues for security, new privacy implications. You know, so my hope is that we can solve some of you know, some of the things based on our experience, and move on to tackle other bigger things. I do think we're going to have to address kind of how we look at both security and privacy and convenience across corporations and as individuals, right? And I think that's the big question is what is best for us based on convenience and capability and ability to deliver services to individuals and organizations versus the exposure we are taking as an organization and an individual and agreeing to that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems to solve for most companies, at least in security and privacy, is everybody always has a resource problem. Everybody always lacks a resource to put so much time into certain things. And I think for kind of in tandem, having a product that solves helping for that, like you mentioned earlier today, earlier in this call, earlier, you did mention something like that, which I think is huge. I think developing and kind of having an answer for that for your customers and helping take weight off of their shoulders so they don't have to hire a full-time FTE, you know what I mean? Like, to where you can actually solve that problem and another problem in itself would be a winner for sure, because customers that I deal with in this realm, that's one of the biggest problems they have is not having enough time to dedicate to
resource constraints always.
Yeah.
My running mantra to people is, you know, and this is how we kind of get in some of these problems too, is automate away what you can, because there's always from an analyst workload, there's always going to be something I can give you that we should be working on that we're not working on because we're doing, you know, this other thing. And if we can find a way to solve that problem with a tool, a capability, a computer, we can move our people onto another problem. To your point,
yeah.
And we're not getting out of this anytime soon. There's always going to be more for someone to look at and do. And so, you know, if we can solve a little bit of the problem, hopefully it helps organizations a little bit more.
You eliminate two things. You eliminate human error, and that human can also blame it on the automation if something goes wrong.
That's right.
Not the other way around. So anyways.
You weren't the human that had to create the automation.
Right. That's the twist. Who is the human that created? Yes. Right. So there was a human involved somewhere.
It usually but, is. Yeah.
Should we fear automation taking up jobs in this space over time?
maybe, but I don't, you know, I mean, I don't think there's enough time in the day for, you know, corporate security, for product people, for, you know, managed service providers to solve this. So, I mean, it does say something that we keep introducing issues that we have to grapple with as we expand our IT ecosystem. So I don't personally fear automation in this realm, because I think we have so many things that we still have to tackle and haven't figured out. I think most organizations will take whatever help they can get. And that goes back to my earlier thing about being able to take our expertise and empower it into a broader, you know, platform like Microsoft's to help an organization that has one person, two people, no people focused on the security problem. If we can make the platform better, we can, you know, hopefully reduce an organization's attack service.
Yeah, it's true. For the listeners out there, Steve, do you have any tips, either company-wise or personal, on just making your security and privacy better?
I love my Raspberry Pi that runs Pi-hole to filter traffic. So I think that's always if you're a bit of a tinkerer and want to improve your privacy, I think that has been a nice project. Two-factor authentication, as we discussed earlier, is clearly a good starting point. And then, you know, just understanding what you're willing to give away for free and the trade-off of where that data goes. Is important.
Yeah, agreed. Do you have anything that you'd like to bring up before we move on to our last segment?
I mean, I think we've covered a lot, so I'm good on my side.
Gabe?
I am good. I was looking for, there was, so I've been completely rebuilding my home systems, plural, and I came across a project that kind of improves on Pi-hole I was going to share with you, but I can't find it right now.
Oh.
Yeah, so when I do, I will. I just.
Yeah, I saw your, yeah, I saw your eyes light up when he mentioned that.
Ooh, Pi-hole. Yeah, I've literally been.
I just started thinking about pie. Now I'm hungry.
And there's that.
I mean, while we're at it,
it's a perfect time.
Friendly, right? European Pie Days in June, so you know that's happening. That's happening.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's go around the room here. What's your favorite pie? What's the go to?
I'm fruit based, so it would have to be apple or blueberry for me.
Blueberry for sure. Apple pie is good.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't mean to offend, but you guys are both absolutely nuts. It's apple pie in your home. Like, what are you talking about? Oh, there are other pies. There are no
if
other
you talk
pies.
To my wife, it's pecan pie, and I just can't get on board with nut-based pies.
The judges will allow it. The judges will allow pecan.
I'd rather have pumpkin pie than that, that's just me. I know.
I'm on the fence on that.
But I guess it has to be like Thanksgiving. It's just, I've had it since I was little. So it's like, it's just so simple. I like
it. Seems
pumpkin.
Like a whipped cream delivery mechanism, if you're asking me.
That's all it really is. Let's be honest.
All right. That's fair. I do like the taste of it, though. I will say that. The consistency. And if it's got a good crust, I mean, it has to. If it doesn't, get out of town.
Get out of town.
Get out of here. My wife does make she's good at making like cheesecake. Pies. She makes she's made like a peanut butter one with
hold on.
Like a chocolate crust.
You're gonna get a lot of people adding us, and I just want to make sure they only add Cameron. He said cheesecake pie. He said cake pie. I'm gonna make sure you add Cameron Ivy, not at
that's
I'm just three sitting on a right food there. Delivery app right now and ordering a pie based on this conversation.
all right, so since we're in our final segment here, so this is basically where we ask personal questions to deep dive into your personal life, because you know,
let's do it
naturally. Why not? That just makes sense. So favorite movie. Yeah, let's just go with favorite movie, because I was gonna ask you, well, no, time out, back up.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Let's just say you can cast yourself. I'm phrasing that wrong. Let's say you can, there's a movie that can be made about your life. Who would play you, and what type of movie would it be? Ew, like what genre?
This is a hard one. I don't know. I've always been a fan of Westerns. Maybe we could have a cybersecurity Western.
All right. Oh, like Westworld.
There we go. That was fantastic.
Okay. Like a sci-fi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first season by far was definitely the best.
I like where all this is going. I could see like cyberpunk mixed with like cowboys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's work for the industry.
Like Ice-T is still acting. Let's see if he'll come back to do like a Johnny Mnemonic again. Yes, but this, yeah. Like, but this time a cowboy version of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anything with cowboy, like, yes. I'm sold on it.
Get Spielberg on the phone.
I think we're in. I mean, we've already got the start.
Okay.
I don't see this could flop, gentlemen. I just don't. Seems perfect.
Who's going to play you, though, Steve? What actor?
Horrible at this game and names. So now I'm.
I always default to Brad Pitt.
It doesn't have to resemble you. It could be your favorite actor. It could be your favorite actor.
I'm going Catherine Zeta-Jones for me. So pick whoever you want.
Yeah, there we go. You know, I have a lot of respect for De Niro. I could De Niro it.
You can never go wrong with De Niro, or what's his name? Talking me wrong. It's the wrong tone. What's his name?
Pesci?
No, not Pesci.
No. Pacino.
Not Pacino. The other guy.
It's all Whoa. Guys.
More cowbell.
Oh.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah.
That guy.
Walken.
That guy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Gosh.
It's Friday. I can't remember.
It's all kinds of Friday. Don't even worry.
Tell me about it. All right.
We're almost.
Steve, you got kids at the house. I think you have one daughter.
One daughter.
Keeps us
nice and busy.
What's the toilet paper situation like at the house? Are you guys really particular about putting the toilet paper roll and having it grabbed on top or the bottom, or is it just kind of chaos?
Has to be on top.
Okay.
That's.
All right. He passed, Gabe. He passed the test.
Look, a man of class and refinement. I knew it when he came on the show though. Like I was,
I knew there is a correct way.
Yes, there absolutely
she's
is.
Living in this society.
Yes. Yeah, there are rules.
There are rules.
All right. So favorite, we'll go back to the movie thing. Favorite movie, and we'll go with favorite TV show too. Like go to
movie I've probably watched the most was Top Gun. I was a huge Top Gun fan when I was little.
So you got to be excited about the new one.
I am. We'll see. I definitely want to see.
I've got some high hopes. It looks good.
Times. I mean, yeah. So I'm ready.
Which could be a good thing. Maybe they're tweaking it and making it like it's got some hype in it. It looks like it's going to be good.
Okay. And I just wrapped up Mayor of Kingstown. And really enjoyed it. That was the latest TV show I wrapped up. It was a good watch.
Okay, I'll put it on my list. I have that. That's on HBO Max, right?
I think so, yeah. I got it through Hulu. Not last night, though. They had an outage.
Okay. I'll recommend one for you because I feel like I have some good taste. For the listeners out there.
It sounds like you do.
Thanks. One good show that I'm totally into, and the reason why I'm bringing it up because you brought up Cowboys, Yellowstone. Have you watched that yet?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I knew we had good taste.
A man of class, I tell you.
It is, yeah.
Indeed.
It's perfect. All right, so how would you describe the color yellow to a blind person? Threw you off there, huh?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this. Let's go with happy.
And you know it? Clap your hands?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean...
That works though.
All
happy.
The descriptors that come into my mind then make me think like, would that be helpful? Right?
Yeah.
Sunshine, a warm hug.
Warm hug, yeah.
I was in Seattle, you can tell, and I got back to Memphis and it's sunny. And so I'm relating to the warm weather today.
Sunshine and warm hugs is it's good. It's good.
Judges will allow it.
Yes. Yes. Points.
All right. Last question.
I'm ready.
Is there one application on your cell phone that you absolutely hate, but you have to use it?
I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter. For our industry, it is great from news, from following people and understanding the latest and greatest in research and in vulnerabilities and what's top of mind for people. So, I mean, there's fantastic content in the security space that keeps me engaged. It's a tug of war in our house where my wife's like, are you on Twitter again? I was like, yeah, but there's this really good write-up about, so I have a love-hate relationship with it because I'm probably on it too much. I'm not much of a poster, but I'm a big consumer of information. So I'd have to go with that.
You just got to follow. It's at S.E. Ginty for those looking for him. I just got him. I agree. I'm going to agree with that. The judges, again, points.
We should start giving out rewards, man. Yeah. Privacy, please, rewards.
Yeah. Well, we'll like tally it. Up okay. the points at the end, but much like Whose Line Is It? They don't matter. They're all.
They don't matter. Oh, I miss that show.
All for the audience's pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, I missed that show with Wayne Brady and then the other two. What were the other two? The bald guy and the other.
Colin,
they're so
Colin
good,
Gentry,
though.
Colin Gentry.
Yeah, Colin.
Yeah,
they're
Ryan,
so good.
Ryan Mockery.
Is that Ryan's the tall one?
Ryan's the tall one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good.
There's. I mean, that was the US version. There's a whole British version. You should watch that one.
Of course, we steal everything from the British.
Well, I mean, we literally
do. We
stole all of this.
I mean,
it was a twofer, actually. We stole it from the people that were here and the people that claimed it.
They stole it from someone else. So, yeah. I mean, it was there was a lot of stealing going
there
on.
Was a whole lot of stealing going on.
Wait, are we talking about The Office and the original Office?
Sure,
too?
Sure.
There's that as well. Yeah. Because it became one of the biggest shows ever. Yeah. One of the biggest comedy sitcoms ever. Is it a sitcom? I don't know.
I think it is a sitcom. I don't know what the situations were, but I think it does qualify as sitcom, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Just blurred
maybe.
Into reality.
Yeah.
But yeah. But it's not like a Cheers. It's gotta be, I think sitcoms are more cornyish, like with a laugh track. I think the more newer shows like The Office and stuff.
No, you
are
right. You're right. It was a mockumentary. You're correct.
Mockumentary, okay. I like mockumentary.
You are correct.
Okay. Well, since we just hit a credible squirrel there,
big hairy one with a tattoo.
Oh, gosh. Well, happy Friday, everyone. Happy whatever day you're listening to this on, but thank you so much, Steve, for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it. You're awesome. And hopefully we'll get a chance to have you come back on for a part two.
Yeah, this is great. So thank you both, Gabe and Cameron, for having me.
Steve, an absolute pleasure. I hope to see you out there in the world. One of these days, I might tickle you in some other random questions because your background intrigues me on so many very levels. But it's good
I'm
to be
always connected. Happy to be
yeah, right on. Good to have you on the show. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks for tuning in to Privacy Please. This podcast is brought to you by Spirion, protecting what matters most. If you guys want to keep hearing us and supporting us, please, please, please email me at cameron.ivey@spirion.com. That's cameron.ivey@spirion, spirion.com. We would love to hear from you. New topics, guests, all that good stuff. Support us. We love doing this every single week and we hope to continue. Thanks again for your support. And again, Cameron Ivey, over and out. All around decent guy. See you next week.